You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello from the studio in Nitro, West Virginia. This is Unreasonable Doubt. It's a podcast about West Virginia University basketball. I'm Josh Witt. West Virginia beat the Drexel Dragons. And so the positives are that's the last Kerr Creasa polo game. West Virginia scored more points than Drexel. That's a positive. Seth Wilson, they were running offense for Seth Wilson, and Seth Wilson was making shots in rhythm. Fantastic to see. And the negatives, I'm not bragging, but I bring cash to the Coliseum. That's my experience. You pay cash to park, you pay cash for the Zolls. Like, those are cash only scenarios. Show up at the Coliseum, cashless society in the Coliseum. Card only, including for parking, card only. Do I have cash on me on the regular? Absolutely not. Does that fit my lifestyle? Absolutely. Was it weird that I prepared with my going to the ATM experience? Only weird for me. And then the other negative is that this game was, another positive. West Virginia didn't run out of gas. Like, you can see, a Cook played more minutes. A Cook scored his first baskets for WVU. That's exciting. Having him give breaks for Quinn and Jesse, that was encouraging, and I like that. And I'm going to like when Kerr gets to play and do the same for the guard rotation. So that's a positive. The negative is you needed Drexel to miss some shots. And they had good looks, and they just missed the good looks. And even I had an angel and devil scenario. I took my family with me. The angel on my shoulder was my mother-in-law, who at the under four timeout in the second half, she looked at me and said, "We're going to win this game." And then I had the devil on my shoulder, which was my father, who when West Virginia was turning the ball over late in the game, he was saying, "Now watch this. They're going to come down and make a three." So much so that when when Quinn went to the line for 1-1 late, I got ahead of him and said, "Whatever you have in your head, don't say it out loud." Because I knew what he was about to say is, "Quinn's going to miss the front end." And did that happen? Yes. Did I keep my father from saying that out loud? Yes. Did I know what he was thinking? Yes. But West Virginia gets a win. Those have been premium. They get Kerr back for the upcoming game against UMass. I don't know how to even speak on the Raekwon battle situation. Multiple lawsuits. I do know that. One, Raekwon battle versus the NCAA, and then one where multiple states are suing the NCAA in regards to their transfer policy and the waiver process. All that feels like it's going to take some time. The semester's ending, so can West Virginia bring a guy in for the second semester, for the spring semester? I can't knowledgeably talk about any of that other than it's just very definitely in the background and can change the outlook of this team and this season, or it can be absolutely what it is now, which is these are our 10 scholarship guys available. We're up to 10. So technically five scholarship guys could play five scholarship guys in practice. And then all 10 of those guys can play in the games moving forward if they're not injured. And that's exciting. Just more guys. And so we're up to double digits. That's a great thing to have. You'd like to have that in the first game of the season. West Virginia couldn't do that, but we're here now. And Akoke played more minutes, and Kerr's going to, I don't think he's going to have a limit, but how do you get in the game shape when you're practicing? We're going to find that out together. But that leads me into my guest, a rare interview during the season for this podcast. Curry Hicks-Sage joins the show. Who is Curry Hicks-Sage? If you don't know him and you're not on the X on the Twitter, I'm just going to read his biography. Is that what you call that? Your bio in X? Foremost unaffiliated expert on college basketball coaching searches. His words. And I listened to Curry Hicks-Sage in June when West Virginia had a coaching search, and he hosts some Twitter spaces. That's what they were called at that time, and trying to figure out what's going on, who West Virginia is going to hire. We talk about that in the interview. And he's also on because he's a rabid UMass hoops and football fan. And so West Virginia plays UMass in Springfield this coming Saturday. So we start with UMass conversation, and then we get into the WVU coaching situation. Here's my interview with Curry Hicks-Sage. This interview has some adult language. Listener discretion advised. All right, Curry Hicks-Sage, welcome to Unreasonable Doubt, a podcast about West Virginia University basketball.
Thrilled to be here, genuinely thrilled to be here. I love the Mountaineer fan base, one of my favorites in the country, a place that is like very much a bucket list destination for me, a place I have fond memories of in my earliest years as a UMass fan, watching West Virginia, like I guess they left the A-10 probably when I was like seven, but I feel like I can remember it, some amazing Calipari era wins down there. And just a place I've always had a lot of admiration for in terms of their passion for their program.
Awesome, man. And you got to meet some of us in the summer. And so I'll do dealer's choice. I've got UMass questions and I've got WVU coaching search questions. Which do you want to start first with?
You know, the one I think is there's more meat on the bone for your audience is WVU coaching search. So maybe you do the UMass stuff quick. I give you the roster stuff, and then we get into the nitty gritty. Because I suspect, knowing that fan base a little bit from the summer when I was doing kind of a little bit of a search, you know, show, that, and I don't know if in your intro, by the way, did you tell them your listeners like this, the context on this?
I'm going. Yes, they have already heard me. Right. I haven't recorded.
Yeah, got it. Okay.
But they have heard how you're related to this. Absolutely.
Yeah, I dabble in two worlds and they're sort of different. But so why don't we do UMass first, and then we'll get into the stuff that your people really want to hear, and they can skip ahead, I guess. But, you know,
fantastic.
I'll give you a little breakdown of the UMass stuff.
So Frank Martin, second season, you're 5-2 going into the game next Saturday with West Virginia. And just looking at stats, I haven't seen UMass play, but some of the things read like a Frank Martin team, right? Lots of offensive rebounds, aggressive defense, foul a bunch. What do you think so far of the Frank Martin experience in Massachusetts?
In year two or year one?
In year two.
Year two, much, much to like. Hard to say, though, because the chemistry seems really good. They seem like sort of a much more kind of Frank team than last year. High effort guys, you know, a lot of the cliches, but the important cliches, so to speak, they compete really hard. They share the basketball. They're pretty balanced. They get a lot of paint touches to this kid, Josh Cohn, who's a transfer from St. Francis of Pennsylvania, who was a top 10 scorer in the country last year, I think. And the caveat here is that and you guys know this, but just with non-conference basketball games, it's like there's 362 teams in D1, and we haven't played anybody. I guess maybe our win over Lowell this weekend, they're surprisingly decent. They beat Georgia Tech, and they're maybe just fringe top 150 KenPom type team, but they were without their star big, who I think is like a Pitt transfer, pretty good player who gave us a lot of trouble last year when we lost to them. So, so we do have that win, and it comes a little bit of a caveat. It was a really nice win, but they were without sort of their really good big, and our bigs just kind of cooked them. So, the thing about this group is, you know, and it could be a 7-0 team. They went 10 for 25 against Harvard from the foul line, so losing by three, and it was like outplayed them in every facet. And then ran into a weird Towson team last week in their first true road game, where Towson just kind of played out of their minds, and you know, shit happens. But so it's like, I don't know if they're good yet. I know that the effort is really quality, and that in a kind of balanced A10 with a bunch of teams in the, you know, 70 to 170 range, they'll be capable of competing with just about anybody. There's also a chance they'll be capable of losing to just about anybody on the road. So, it's funny, because the West Virginia game, obviously, when that was announced, pretty everything, it was kind of like, oh, we this is really great. We get like Huggins is doing a solid for Frank, and we're going to have a real test at kind of in a quasi home game atmosphere. And now it's like, truth be told, if we beat you, it's the rare year that an A-10 team like beating a West Virginia is like not going to have the same, national cachet. And so, you know, right after this, they go out to Hawaii and play Georgia Tech, who, you know, lost to UMass Lowell. So it's like a very weird feeling as a fan, because I really like this group of kids. I really like the way they compete. And I just don't know that I'm prepared to say if they're good or not, because when you don't play, haven't played anybody in the top 100 or even like 125, it's, you know, hard to say. Time will tell.
Yeah, and you've got lots of new guys. You talked about the transfer. And then Frank's playing a bunch of freshmen. I count four that are in the rotation and like six or seven total. So lots of youth. Who has impressed you most out of the first seven games of the freshmen that have joined UMass?
So this kid, Jalen Curry, is kind of like the most high major player of the bunch in terms of, you know, had a bunch of high major offers. Frank had some relationships. He's sort of like he's got some pizzazz to his game. He's a lefty. He's shown flashes of really impressive kind of like looks the part play. But in terms of just quality, there's this kid who's, I think he started every game, and I had my kid's fourth birthday party yesterday, so I only saw the last 10 minutes, but Jaden, Njige, and I mispronounce his last name every time. It's really bad of me. He's like this kind of 6'5", do it all, like all the little things. I bet his plus minus is just off the charts kind of kid, you know. Doesn't really make mistakes, gets, you know, lots of offensive rebounds, unbelievable saves, you know, like timely steals. Doesn't really make any bad reads or passes, and, you know, has just sort of by virtue of effort and smarts is just a winner, you know, and he was kind of under recruited, and he's started every game and just been a glue guy that you rarely see as a true freshman. So he's like, he's not a guy. I bet you, if you look at his numbers right now, they're on paper underwhelming, but he impacts the game in a zillion ways and has become a fan favorite in short, you know, very quickly.
Which West Virginia struggling, and we'll get to that, but one of those things we don't have right now is that guy we can point to as like glue guy. So it's always good to have one of those guys. And so it sounds like Jade's the guy. And so Saturday happens, the game's played. What will be the stat we look at after the game and say, this is how the Minutemen beat West Virginia?
Yeah, UMass goes. So despite all the freshmen, they have two really, really terrific an old bigs. One is Josh Cohn, that player I was referring to from St. Francis. He is truly plays like a 44-year-old who's dominating you at the local Y. I mean, he's probably like
old man game. Yeah.
Old man game, like six, a really throwback, like 6'10", maybe 250, 240, whatever. I don't think he jumps. I don't think he's dunked the ball this season. I mean, maybe he has, but, you know, but he just like, he just knows how to catch the ball in the right spot, knows how to, he's an impeccable finisher. And, you know, he had a, I think he had a 40-point game last year against Miami for them, maybe 30. And he's just, he's like, he shot like 60%. He's probably averaging 17, 18 now, you know, 7-8 boards. And again, like he barely jumps when he shoots it, you know, and just really good in the paint and really crafty. It'll be interesting to see Jesse Edwards against him, just athletically. There's obviously no contest, but it's like every game you're like, how is Cohn going to find a way to score against that kid? Or, you know, cause he looks like the least athletic kid almost every time, and he just dominates, you know, like
he gets to his spots, he gets right, gets guys up in the air, just knows how to play.
Yeah, just knows how to play. And like, I mean, like he's had some game, I mean, he had a game against like Central Connecticut. He might have, I feel like he was like, I want to say he finished like 28 on like, you know, 11 of 11, like crazy stat lines. So he can be really good, but you know, he did struggle maybe once against slightly more athletic defender. I can't remember who. So it'll be interesting to see him. And then Matt Cross is kind of our, I mean, he's a real stud. He's a true high major kid who started his career at Miami and was starting as a true freshman, left like mid season, ended up at Louisville and was pretty good on that team too. You know, maybe a six man kind of player, but then that was when I guess Chris Mack left. So he came home. He's a Massachusetts kid. He's in second year here, and having him as a second year guy, like he's become at the ACC, he was a little bit of like a stretch 3/4 man who could shoot the shit out of it. Now he's a bulldog. He's like true 6'7", 6'8", 225, gets downhill, tough as shit, just a dog. And kind of as those two go, we go. And then it's, so it's those two and then a bunch of hardworking freshmen, essentially, right? A good, you know, pretty solid sophomore point guard who makes good decisions and really has been the most improved player on the team, Keon Thompson. But those two are, you know, if they're in foul trouble or they're struggling, we'll struggle against kind of anybody on our schedule. If they're cooking like anybody on our schedule, you know, we could beat. And so, you know, that's really the whole, you know, I think that's the best way to describe it. And I kind of like the balance in this roster, and just in the sense that I think it's, the more college hoops I watch over the years, I kind of think it's nice when there's some role definition, particularly in this era of portal and stuff. I think it's nice when there's a couple of dudes, you know, that you kind of just know are your guys, and then a bunch of like younger guys who really compete. I think that's a fairly good combination in this era, because I think a lot of times programs are trying to build where they just get like five kids who can all score 15 and, you know, from with NIL money. And it's like, all right, but like, who's the dude here? You know what I mean? So I kind of like that from like a roster composition standpoint, but you know, of course, if those two get in foul trouble, we're very, very thin up front. And so it's really a matter of, you know, those two being efficient, effective, and relatively foul free. And then UMass can certainly hang or win the basketball game. If not, it could be a long night.
You're speaking my language when you're talking about thin up front, because West Virginia fans know all about that. So that's the transition to our WVU questions. Bob Huggins, I'm going to air quote this, resigned in June. You were on the coaching search. How well do you think West Virginia handled that search, given the circumstances, and that ended with Josh Eiler getting the interim job?
Gosh, I'm thinking back now, man, and what a journey that was. I think I got like, just from a selfish vanity standpoint, I think I got like 700-800 West Virginia followers during that time. So I mean, from a sheer vanity standpoint, I'll always have them to thank for, you know, my numbers. But no, I mean, Gosh, it was a hard spot. You know, I think with the hindsight is 2020, and in real time, I was like, what the fuck is going on over there? You know, I think stepping back and kind of like understanding just all of these swirling dynamics and kind of the confluence of circumstances of, you know, a very new AD, a legendary figure who was, you know, by most accounts sort of involved or quasi involved in the search for his successor on some level, right? The fact that you had this, you know, monster NIL situation that you'd put together, and like the questions of whether you'd be able to retain some of that, and the questions of, you know, do you need, and in the end, like, and so in real time, I was like, what is going on here? Like, this is just, you know, and if you were going to go with, Josh Eilert, then like, why not just on day two announce that, you know what I mean? But the kind of, so the flirtation with a full departure only to then return to him and not retain a lot of the star talent, I would say it was not, you know, a textbook case of a well-handled search. At the same time, I have respect for, is it Ren Baker?
Mm-hmm.
I have respect for the fact that, like, he, I think, you know, it's probably hard for West Virginia fans to hear this on some level, but I think he recognized, look, like, at this late date, I'm not getting Dusty May or something to uproot his life and come to this, like, very difficult, you know, situation. And sometimes you have to, you know, sort of throw a year, so to speak, right? And I think that you guys, in many ways, your struggles this year will probably help Baker kind of do what he needs to do and win the fan base over with respect to, like, he's the one calling the shots this time. There's no doubt about it. Probably also helps, like, I don't know, you'd be the judge of this, that Neil Brown appears to be returning. And so you don't have the kind of twin money situation just yet. And you know, there's a way in which sometimes the team that needs the money first benefits, you know, I think.
Sure.
So I think that all in all, you know, you're in a good spot now with respect to this coming search season. And you know, I thought in the moment,
it's like, oh my gosh, what is that?
I mean, like for me, so like for me as someone who, for whatever strange reason, my brain has just obsessively gravitated toward this niche universe of searches. For me, it was great, right? From like a, it's like that meme on the internet of like,
grab the popcorn.
I feel bad for our country, but this is tremendous content, you know? Like, you know, like so yeah, like as a practitioner of like how to manage a search, I don't think that you would say this was a good one. Like, but I'm not I'm a commenter, you know, ultimately. So I enjoyed it thoroughly, but as like just drama and narrative and like Shakespearean art. But I guess Gordon G is getting rid of all of that. So, I mean, maybe we don't need it.
It was wild. And we're still, it's just been since then, just count the dominoes that have fallen that have not went in West Virginia's direction. And so you have that with Josh Eilert, where he inherited this position, interim job for a year. If you're Ren Baker, how do you, and he'll be included in that search, how do you judge your interim coach given the circumstance he inherited? Like, how do you do that fairly? Or do you not even?
I don't even think you try, right?
Yeah.
Unless, like, for whatever, I mean, the only way this is there's a wrinkle here, and that makes it fascinating, is what if, for whatever reason, you know, look, you got Kirk Carissa coming back, as I understand. Akuka Cook, I think, came back. I haven't followed the ongoings there too much, but what if, you know, in a Big 12 where there's going to be, you know, 73 teams make the tournament, you steal some games and all of a sudden you're like 8-10 and you win a game against somebody good in that conference tournament. And I can't see a scenario where you back yourself, because some of your losses in the non-conference, but you get so many shots. And the fact that West Virginia team made the tournament last year, right? Like that, you just get so many shots in the Big 12. And look, as an A-10 fan, who a league that was a three-bid league not long ago. Sorry, I'm just throwing the popcorn in. I apologize. I sincerely apologize. So you get so many shots at great opponents there that, you know, stranger things have happened. But absent them, you know, backing their way into the tournament by winning, you know, 8 of their last 10 in dramatic fashion, and, you know, the Morgantown fan base really kind of like coalescing around him, I can't imagine he's really meaningfully in the mix. And, you know, that's no fault to him. It's just like West Virginia has a great NIL situation going. It's a great fan base. Like, you're able to get a really good coach there. And by really good, I just mean established, you know, known. And I think of the jobs that appear to kind of be coming up, you know, you're one of the best ones. So if there is a rising star who wants to jump, then I think you're poised to potentially, you know, poach him.
And that's good to hear. In my lifetime, I've been blessed to only have 3 WVU head coaches, technically 4, if you count the guy that was here for 2 weeks between Catlett and Beilein.
Wait, who was before Beilein? I can't remember.
So it was Gil Catlett for a longtime coach, then Dan Dockich for a week, and then
The Dockich saga.
Zero, yes.
Yeah.
And then we luck out and go with Beilein that gets us Huggins. So it's rare for us to go through this process on the basketball side, pretty comfortable with it on the football side, even with having Don Nealon there as long as he was. Football has always been we're ready for the next guy. Where basketball, it's been pretty sturdy when the guy gets in there. So this is new for us. It's good to hear West Virginia is considered like a good program to look at, obviously with the facilities, fan base. Do you think we'll see some overlap on the names mentioned in June with this upcoming search in the spring?
Yeah, I think that's, and I should also note, look, there are people out there, like, you know, kind of self-professed like insider types, which I don't really like that vibe, but anyway, who would say, oh, West Virginia is really hard. They have a really demanding fan base and it's a tough place to recruit. Like, I don't see it that way. I just think like you guys can kind of recruit from anywhere because you kind of can get, you know, kids from Maryland and that hotbed up there. And then you can sort of go, you know, west too. So it's a Cincinnati and get, you know, but so yeah, that's just me. But anyway, and I would always like encourage you guys to like, you know, tell those doubters to get bent, so to speak. But, I especially in the NIL era. So I think that question you asked is a little bit dependent on performance this year, right?
Sure.
So let's go through the names. I mean, Andy Kennedy, I don't know what UAB is up to. He obviously wanted it bad. I don't know the extent of how the last search also may or may not have strengthened or damaged relationships between Baker and the candidates. I'm not intimately connected enough to know that. I'll try to find it out, but you guys would probably know better than me. And so I would say, like, I don't think Calhoun is having a great year at Youngstown State. There were some high expectations there, and I don't think it's gone terribly well thus far. So those two are kind of like they're not quite Huggins adjacent, but Kennedy is, but they're West Virginia familiar, let's call it. And I think, you know, and whether this is right or wrong, I think it's accurate. Like, my sense is those guys just weren't quite sexy enough for Baker to go with. And so he, you know, because there was rumors that, you know, I think, well, I forget which one, but that they might have offered him 3 years, but he was like, that's bullshit, you know, and so they couldn't come to terms. So I can't imagine they're going to go back to that well too much. Are there other names? And then like Beilein was thrown around as kind of like a quasi interim thing. That's not going to happen. They're going to do just a regular search, I think, and get the best guy. Like, I don't see this as terribly complex on that front. Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay. I can.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I just had to silence a call from my dad. a regular guest on Search Season, and so, or no, like really on the UMass show. So he'll just come in sometimes, and it's a funny bit. But yeah, so who are the other names that got thrown around? I'm trying to think in a real way.
Oh, in a real way, it was Calhoun. It was Kennedy. There was the Beeline talk. I think that's the universe for me as far as a real one. Yeah.
So I don't see any of them unless like one of the first two that you mentioned has like a shocking tournament run where they go deep and they're sort of a hot name, and never discount that. That's always a thing that happens, you know? But I don't think you'll have that. There was also like, but then there was like also crazy talk of like Joe Mazzulla, you know, leaving.
And the Division II guy. That's the other, I don't remember the name, but the Division II guy that had Baker ties.
Ben McCollum's name got thrown around a little.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting name. But yeah, so like, I think as far as like, I think this is just going to be a straight up regular search, you know, like names all around the country. And it'll be very interesting to see whether Huggins, I don't know. It sounds like Huggins is sort of on better footing than he was then.
He's showing up to the Coliseum, which is just a weird vibe. I don't know on the administration side that Huggins tie that probably felt more important in June. I agree with you that that's probably not there given the circumstances, but it is, I mean, he's showing up for games and, just in the Coliseum, just a paid seat and watches the games. He hasn't been to all of them, but it's just a weird dynamic. And I don't know how that works. I can't imagine it can't get worse than June, but I don't think I don't know how much better it's gotten since that.
Well, cause like, I guess the question with that is like, do your money people still listen to him? And are they in the ear of Baker based on it? Cause I know to some extent they were back then. Right. And that kind of makes sense. Some people were like, oh, we can't let, you know, this is so dysfunctional. We can't let, you know, Huggins be like dictating it. And it's like, okay, fair enough. But like, he is Bobby Huggins. And even despite this, but, you know, but that was June. Right. And so now I think like at a certain point, any kind of professional, and it's no knock on Bob, it's just like any professional athletic director is just going to want to make that call themselves. And if their hands, you know, if their hands are tied because of pre-existing relationships with a couple of donors, then it's like kind of a pointless job to be in, I always think, you know.
right.
And I have to imagine he probably has a little bit of more credibility now. And if he's smart and he sounds like a sharp guy, he has probably spent the intervening months having those conversations with the right donors to make sure that it's like they're happy, but it's also like, hey guys, like I got this from here, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think that's the vibe. He's very involved in the NIL group. He's said on record that he's got a list, and I think he's taking a proactive approach and having those conversations, and will be ready. And he saved the headache of worrying about Neil Brown with an 8-4 season on the football side. So that does help him get some focus on, he did a great job so far with the women's side, getting that coach. And so he'll take that momentum plus not having to worry with Brown to tackle what's going to happen in March. And it'll be interesting.
He also has the tremendous benefit of, you know, 4 months to do this, you know? I mean, many of these searches, right? Like people kind of forget that guys will sort of like have a better year than you're expecting. And now you kind of aren't sure if you're going to fire them. And you're, you know, like you guys basically are ready to go. And he can be having conversations through back channels, through agents, most likely, with any candidate he has any interest in whatsoever, in just terms of like gauging their interests. What are the family like? And that helps a lot, I think, in terms of, I mean, the thing I love about searches is they're so like quirky. Each of them is a little different. And, you know, somebody's wife has a certain concern about, you know, the schools in Morgantown or like whatever the thing may be. You now have several months to gather all the intel and kind of be able to anticipate some of the hurdles and, you know, how you're going to navigate that when the time comes. Because end of the day, searches take between, you know, 4 and
24 days officially, right? And often that's all you get. I mean, yeah, they're thinking about it, but like, you know, there's a lot of other things falling. You are off to the races here already, and you can kind of game out. So I would say, like, the expectations for West Virginia fans, and sorry if I'm just on a digression here, but should be high because you guys have all the advantages in terms of how to conduct the search and just like the mechanics of it.
Right. It's not starting on day one in March. It started back in June, technically, and exactly. To do what you're describing. And exactly. So that's encouraging. And then last question, who's going to win Saturday night? Is it Minutemen?
Oh, wait, I thought we were going to go through names.
Let's go through names in that. It doesn't seem early to talk about them in the December, given what you just said, that names can emerge, teams can come out of nowhere, and those names ride with those to top of coaching search lists. Do you have like a pseudo list outside of Kennedy and Calhoun?
I mean, I don't have those guys on my list.
Yeah.
Period.
So, okay.
I think like, so Nico Medved, I just learned this week, because I got a couple of guys, me and a couple of search heads have our little group chat going now. And somebody brought to my attention this week, and I hope I'm not breaking news here, but I don't want to attribute this to the person because they may not want me to share it. But Nico Medved, who's kind of the up-and-coming star or among the up-and-coming stars in this game, who's killing it at Colorado State this year. They were undefeated until losing yesterday, I think, to St. Mary's. The consensus I had thought was he was going to Minnesota, which is his alma mater. And he even has, I've been told, has like a special buyout clause with just Minnesota, like a dream job buyout clause. And
interesting.
Then someone brought to my attention that his wife is from Morgantown and that the two of them got married there. So, and frankly, West Virginia is a much better job than Minnesota at this point. So I had to, like, you know, I see that as noteworthy. I'm not trying to start, careful not to start too many rumors, but I think, you know, like, those are salient facts, you know, that I think you can do with what you will, but that's interesting. Then in terms of like really swinging for the fences and just like going for it, I mean, I think you have to like consider Dusty May just because, you know, after what he did at FAU last year and how he built that program up and what he's done again this year, you know, he's going to obviously be the anointed one, so to speak, at any big job. And so, you know, whether Louisville probably comes open, and, you know, some people say, well, he's waiting for Indiana, where he went, was a manager under Bob Knight. But I just think, like, you guys are big enough to at least hold on. My wife asked me to quiet down. Good content. He is a name I think you'd have to pursue a little bit, right? And then, sure. And then I think, you know, Brent Baker has a pre-existing relationship with Grant McCausland at Texas Tech.
Right.
You know, because they were together at North Texas, which is a really impressive program in its own right. And, you know, I don't know that he would leave after 1 year. I think he's got it pretty good at Texas Tech, but I personally think West Virginia is an easier place to win, generally speaking, than Texas Tech. Not dramatically so, but I think it is. And you never know. So guys, you know, was it Underwood was at, you know, Oklahoma State for like a year, and then he went to Illinois, you know, so it happened. And I think, you know, that would certainly be a name you'd have to think would get a call. I'm trying to think, is there any other names you guys are hearing around there?
No, not really. I think it's early and we still are trying to process the Raekwon battle waiver scenario and like a pie in the sky. What if we've got everybody and what does that look like? And does that help Eilert? So I think we're in too soon to talk about it for the most part. I think that increases once Battle stays where he's at, not eligible, and then West Virginia enters this Big 12 schedule. I think we'll start seeing some names and some things thrown about as far as who could possibly come in. And then, like you said, just the names that we don't know yet that could show up on the radar, given
and
how
they're
performing.
And one other thing I would just say, like, as a fan base for you guys, because you have an incredibly good, rabid online fan base. And there's no doubt, no matter what athletic directors will tell you, and I originally came to all this kind of as a fan during the UMass search a couple of years ago. And I don't care what anybody says, they pay attention to fan sentiment, right? It doesn't necessarily drive the bus. You know, usually money guys do, but money guys sometimes also listen to grassroots fan sentiment. And I would just say, like, if there's anything I've tried to do with this whole search season nonsense, it's don't preclude yourselves. Don't do away with the idea of guys who aren't necessarily quote unquote names being really fucking good. And I think especially in the West, in the NIL era, where you guys have a good NIL situation, you have the resources in place to sort of get the talent you need. And it's changed that's changed the game so much in recruiting. You don't necessarily need like a world-class recruiter anymore, right? The NIL does a lot of that for you. And there's just guys I'm watching around the country. I was rambling about my recent, you know, flavor of the week, which is this guy, Josh Schertz at Indiana State. And my point was that in an NIL environment where recruiting has changed, right? Like kids want, you know, there's exceptions, but kids want money. Let's just call it out, right? And so there once was a time where, you know, you were a great recruiter. You really sold the kid and you were persuasive. And maybe there was some money, you know, coming through other ways, but that was, you know, kind of not discussed. Now it's like, I mean, yeah, you still got to have a persuasive guy. You don't want to be around like jerks, but it's like, listen, like, what's my bag? And, you know, what else should I know? And how am I going to play? Right. And so I think that that actually provides programs like West Virginia's the unique ability to go out and hire a guy who can really coach, even if his pedigree isn't as like an elite recruiter to a Power Five school, you know, because the thing that makes a Power Five different than a low major is the recruiting. And if you don't have to, first of all, like a lot of guys at low majors can recruit and they have great eyes for talent and whatever. But I'm just saying that, like, don't do like a washed up retread who, like, you know, was good 10 years ago or, you know, there's all these like kind of archetypes that people go after. Or a lot of times, you know, it's like not at West Virginia so much, but, you know, the hot young assistant who, you know, there's a lot of things that can work at West Virginia. But the bottom line is you have your infrastructure in place to be competitive from a resources and NIL standpoint. So find a guy who can really coach, you know. And I think at West Virginia, the complaint I got most from fans in your fan base was like, there's a little too much like good old boy influence and, you know, dysfunction. And, you know, it's like we got to hire a professional, not someone who just like knows how to glad hand with the eight biggest donors and, you know, the school president or whatever. I'm oversimplifying, but I think that that's probably right. Just get a great coach. And as a fan base, you know, they will fall there. You know, they are aware of the fan sentiment, right? And so I always encourage fan bases like to give your ADs the permission to make interesting decisions, you know, because if they feel that permission, they're more likely to do it the right way. If they feel like, oh, we have to do it this specific way and get this fancy name so that we can win the press conference, sometimes it works, but sometimes it really backfires. And I just would encourage them to be, you know, fans to sort of give the decision makers the space to do interesting things.
Yeah. I mean, and when you say that, and it's 20 years ago, but it speaks to the Dan Dockich there for a week, you know, Bobby Knight pedigree doesn't work out, hire outside of the West Virginia spectrum with Beeline, just known to be a really good coach, has won everywhere, started from the bottom up, and that worked out well. So I think this fan base appreciates that, have that in their memory, and will look forward to something like that and being outside of the good old boy network as described. So,
and Beeline is such a good example, as you say, because you're right. He coached everywhere. And the thing I always think about is head coaching experience doesn't matter what level, right? Like all the other stuff, I think, you know, can be taught and adapted to. But sometimes you'll hire these great young up and coming assistants who everybody says wonderful things about, but they've never had to sit there and like lead a program, you know. And it doesn't matter if you're leading a D2, not that you go directly from D2, but I'm saying if you're a top assistant, you know, at Houston or something, and I'm just thinking of like who's the best in the Big 12 now, or Kansas, or whatever, and you've been a head coach elsewhere, that's fine, right? Like as long as you've been good at it, right? Like that's, but I think like, you know, sometimes it's like we got to hire the guy who has 3 years of head coaching experience and has been like totally ascendant and crushed it, you know, not to knock him because he's a good dude, but Matt McCall at UMass, our previous coach before Frank, he was a Billy Donovan assistant at Florida for a long time, really in that circle, you know, connected and really well liked. Then he got 2 years at Chattanooga where he killed it. But the thing is, Chattanooga had been coached by Will Wade, who was really good, who's another name West Virginia should take a long look at. You know,
scandalous. I don't know with Will Wade's Google Will Wade. He's doing great at McNeese State right now, but also he has the LSU experience on his record. And given the environment and all of the TMZ kind of effects of this year, as a fan base, yeah. I don't know if we want to go in the Will Wade territory, there's even though a proven winner. Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, that's the thing. Like, oftentimes with the sexiest names, there's drama associated with it, right? Like, that's kind of why they're, you know, why they're sexy. Like, you think of Lane Kiffin or something, you know, like there's just, that is a reality. And you have to ask yourself as a fan base, like sort of what you're comfortable with in terms of, but the point I was making was just that McCall had inherited a Will Wade team, won like 29 games with those kids his first year, and then had like one kind of, you know, they're like 19-12 and maybe lost the locker room. Who knows? Not important at this point, but then UMass saw that as enough to get him. And I was, at the time I was like, oh, cool, good hire. But now as I look back, it's like, you know, he only had 2 years leading his own program, and it was at a place that he had inherited a really good situation. And prior to that, he'd been at Florida, which was, you know, under Donovan, which operated like an absolute machine, right? And so having a guy who's figured out how they want to run a practice, how they want to coach, who's seen a lot of different, just seen a lot of different bullshit over the years, right? Doesn't matter the level, because the drama internally is always the same. It's, you know, an asshole kid on the team who you can't get buy-in from. It's a assistant coach who's, you know, wife and him are going through a divorce, whatever the things are, right? Like just having been in that chair, you can learn a lot of that at any level of being a head coach. And I just think that, you know, kind of the guy who's got 3 or 4 years of experience who's 37 and crushed it. There are a couple of those guys out there. They come along, you know, Shaka Smart at one point, Dusty May's older than that now. He certainly can't miss guys that exist, but there's a lot of just terrific professionals out there who've been toiling for a long time. Schertz was the name that just came to mind. And I think not being afraid of that is important.
That's fair. And this has been great stuff. Final two questions. First of all, you spoke highly of the West Virginia fan base in your interactions with us, especially over the summer. Is there a fan base that you've interacted with where you feel the opposite of how you feel about WVU fans?
You know, throughout search season, I'd say, look, I mean, I think that when you get like the worst of the worst, you just kind of block them and move on, you know, but Providence is pretty crazy. That's a unique place. I kind of admire their craziness, but they're not, many of them, not all, are just, I mean, it's funny because if you grew up in New England, Providence as a city is like this weird thing because it's kind of a legitimate city, but it's like always overshadowed by Boston and then by UConn the other direction. So, and it's like, and they think they should be really good because they have some history, you know. And it's really, and there's no pro teams in town. So it's like a weird thing where I don't think anybody gives a shit about Providence basketball except for the 25,000 people for whom it's like their number one thing. And it's a bedlam atmosphere.
and they can just be a little irrational. And during the Ed Cooley departure, which was a crazy string of events, they were, you know,
apoplectic.
Why? Who's the worst fan base for you guys in the Big 12? Like, that's notorious. Because I mean, a lot of it's like I'm still interacting, meeting new fans. You know, like this year I'll meet five new fan bases. You know, so like, who should I be on the lookout for?
It's wild that in its current iteration, we'll get to meet the four Pac-12. I think it's, and I'm copping out here, but I think it's going to be one of the four Pac-12 schools that are coming in. And I'm looking at you, Utah, as the possible ire. Just in the we're joining the truck stop conference. We're way above this, even though they
really Utah thinks they're above the Big 12.
Internet vibes. It doesn't speak for the fan base, just what I saw on the social media. It was a very and I don't blame them, but it was a lot of how did we get in a conference where we're going to Lubbock and Morgantown. It was that kind of vibe with Utah, where I didn't feel that. BYU came to Morgantown for football, rave reviews of the fans.
Well, BYU people, I mean, look, I never want to talk about any particular religion, but Mormons, you never meet a mean Mormon on the internet. They don't exist, you know? Maybe they do in their own, but like part of the whole like Mormon ethos is like they're super friendly. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Utah obviously has a lot of Mormons at Utah, I'm sure, too. But that's like the non-Mormon school.
It's a state school. Right.
You know, and so even so, I wouldn't expect them to be like elitist and thumbing their nose at, you know, Big 12 schools that have real pedigree. That, because it's not like Utah. I mean, where was Utah before the Pac-12, which is fairly recent?
What's in my head, and it's probably recency of how successful they've been on the football side. Basketball, obviously, you know, West Virginia fans remember 97 and Rick Majerus's Final Four run. So I think that's football leading and recency of we've been really good, and now we're taking a step down in their minds. That was the most vocal one, where the other ones were – more apt to, like, I mean, Colorado seems like a good fit. Arizona seems very symbiotic. Like, it seems very good. And then Arizona State's AD, who's no longer there, he's like, I'm not going to Morgantown. But that wasn't the fan base. And I don't know how much passion is at the Arizona State fan base. But no, Utah is my cop out, because I can't think of a rough fan base on the social media in the current iteration. I really don't. It seems like everybody talks their stuff, but it's not crazy. Like, it's not.
They're
like,
not in the Big 12 anymore, and I don't really interact with them online. But everything I see out of Texas A&M is just weird.
That is a yes.
I mean, it's just weird.
The word cult comes to mind. The word, it's a unique place.
It's a weird, weird deal. Like, it's just nothing. I mean, it's like, it's kind of like they're trying to be like maybe military, but it's like, you're not Army, Navy. You're not a service academy. Like, no one respects you for that. You're like oil guys in like military uniform. I don't really get what's going on there. It's just, it's never, that one has just never made a lick of sense to me, and they seem like a strange group. But I mean, obviously they're an unbelievably engaged fan base. It's just I don't know, that one just, that there's something about it that just doesn't sit right with me.
And Utah fans, prove me wrong when you join the conference, but that your introduction was out there. All right, Curry Hicks Sage, who wins Saturday, West Virginia or UMass?
Man, with Kirk Carissa coming back, that's going to be a tough game for UMass. And I say this with full hope that I'm completely wrong and I'll catch it from some UMass people, but we struggled in that building last year against a good North Texas team. I think West Virginia wins the basketball game 72-66.
Well, you haven't watched WVU, because 72 is a stretch for any game. But I agree with you, in the Kerrs coming back, the offense is going to be way better. We'll see what the
defense without looks him. Like. I mean, I think probably I'd say UMass by two or something, you know?
Right. Yeah. All right. Curry Hicks, say, just
if he has a 3-for-13, if he has a 3-for-13 night and they can't get him the offense, there's many scenarios in which UMass could dominate, you know, win the game, but not dominate, but
Jesse Edwards like is a really tough is like a really tough matchup, I think. And if it gets us in a little foul trouble, then it's, you know, matchups are everything in college basketball. And so I don't know. I mean, do you think?
It's going to be interesting. Well, if they run the, and now we have nine, we'll be up to 10 scholarship guys with Kerr there. We'll play eight and just spot minutes for another guy. And so UMass's road to victory in my head is the SMU playbook, which is run us to death, press, which Martin teams, I don't know if y'all are doing that now, but you're capable of doing that. And so you just run us into the ground and but with numbers and another guy that gets a little bit tougher, I still think it's possible given it's Kerr's first game and just wondering how he approaches his first game eligible. Will he be pressing or will he be just fluid and it works out well? That'll be the interesting part.
You think you'll get any West Virginia fans in Springfield?
There's always – you'll get a pocket, but I don't know how many – you know, really, with what happened in the summer, that changed the dynamic of how many – of what this game looks like, obviously the Huggins-Martin connection, but also how many people are going to travel given West Virginia goes into this game with a losing record. So
I'll be curious. I mean, UMass too, because I think the kids start finals or are sort of beginning to finish up finals probably by that point. And it's like, it's a 30 minute ride from campus Springfield. And it's a tough town. It's like, it's a fun venue. When UMass is really good, they'll play there once in a while and it gets rocking. It's a kind of a dump, but it's a charming dump. It's like, it's low ceilings. It can get really loud. It seats about 7,000 and I'm sure there'll be a ton of Bonaventure fans for the first game. So who knows? I mean, it could get lively in there and that could help UMass, but I wouldn't expect it to be like terribly raucous.
I don't know how big the pocket of WVU fans will be. They will be loud and they will buy all of your beer. So be prepared for that.
If it was still there, it would have been really fun because, I mean, he played at UMass his first 2 years, but alas.
Yeah. Curry Hicks Sage, this has been a pleasure. Thank you for joining me on Unreasonable Doubt, a podcast about West Virginia University basketball.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you having me and then putting up with all my rants.
Unreasonable Doubt is under the Smoking Musket umbrella. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to smokingmusket.com and at the top of the page, there's a button for Discord. Hit that button. And when you do that, you get into a world of people who are WVU fans who talk about all things WVU sports. All these different channels with all of the different sports, stuff outside of WVU, like-minded Mountaineer fans together talking about sports and other things. So go to smokingmusket.com, read the articles first, and then click that, or however you want to do it, click the Discord button and join the Discord and talk it up. Smoking Musket. Big thanks to Curry Hicks Sage for joining me on the podcast. You can find Curry Hicks Sage on X at Curry Hicks Sage, CurryHicksSage. The next game for WVU is Saturday, 6:30 p.m., ESPNU, Springfield, Massachusetts, the Hall of Fame Classic. I think this is a classic. And West Virginia plays the UMass Minutemen. So old Atlantic 10 rival UMass coached by Frank Martin. So that's somebody we know. And the offensive rebound. And they get a lot of second chance points and they get a lot of points off turnovers. But Kerr's coming back. And so how much will that help West Virginia's offense? This is what is Kerr going to look like and how does he change the dynamic of this team? Win or lose, what does it look like when we've got 10 guys available? And I know what that means probably for Jeremiah Bembry for the rest of the season, but how Kerr and Seth and Kobe, how those minutes are spread out and will he play more minutes? I would bet on that. And let's see what it looks like. Neither team, I mean, UMass, as you heard Curry Hicks Sage, haven't played anybody yet.
and they have a couple of losses. So this should be fun. Technically a neutral site game, but it's in the state of Massachusetts, so it should be a high percentage of UMass fans. Let's see what it looks like. It'll be fun. That's it for this episode of Unreasonable Doubt. Listen on all the platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Overcast Podcast, Pocket Cast Podcast, YouTube. Until next time, I'm Josh Witt, WVU for the 2023-2024 season. They have 4 wins and they have 5 losses.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.